Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
Thank you for sharing the news. We could have told them together. Why did you want me to do it? In times of crisis, people need to know that their leaders are not rattled by uncertainty or overwhelming odds. They need to know that there is a plan, that they'll be okay. You're their president. You can give them confidence, a sense of security. You're my president too. I'm grateful. We had the chance to connect before we approached Species 10C.
We can't communicate with each other. What chance do we have with them?
You'll know when you had too many chocolate bars.
Like full bars?
I mean, just it doesn't make a difference. Just eat. That's like a pound of feathers, pound of marbles. It's all a pound.
Yeah, okay. Enough with the too much chocolate talk. Let's talk about Star Trek.
Too much chocolate talk.
Cripes, man.
Let's talk about Star Trek Discovery, Season 4, Episode 10. The title of the episode is The Galactic Barrier.
No, it's just Galactic Barrier.
I think it's The Galactic Barrier.
Sorry, that was probably a horrible mic sound.
Look it up. Made. Look at
I'm us. Almost. I'll bet you.
I saw it
I'll
as
bet
the
you,
Galactic Barrier.
I will.
Look at
I
Memory
will,
Alpha.
I will give you 10,000.
Look at MD. 1,000.
I will give you 10,000.
Quatlus?
I don't even know.
10,000 bushels of
it was called,
quadrat-
it was called the one with the Galactic Barrier.
I believe it was called The Galactic Barrier with the article The.
TrekMovie.com says, review, Star Trek Discovery faces the frontier in, quote-unquote, the Galactic Barrier, but Memory Alpha has its the web page titled just Galactic Barrier.
No, that's the Galactic Barrier as in the generic Galactic Barrier.
They've never talked
in,
about that.
Yes, they have on Where No Man Has Gone Before, which we talked about in episode one of this podcast.
I'm not joking.
That doesn't count.
No, of course that counts.
Why does that count?
Because they go to the Galactic Barrier. I'm saying Memory Alpha has a section on the Galactic Barrier and on, quote, the Galactic
Fine.
Barrier.
It may or may not be the Galactic Barrier, okay?
Okay.
Just because, you know, I could be an asshole and be like, I don't know, I don't believe you, I don't buy it. But I'm looking
yes,
for the...
Yes, I suppose you could.
I'm looking to find the truth. That's the problem, is so many people are
that's
too...
Not, that's not the problem, that's good. I support you on that.
Right, so many people say they're people of,
too many people.
Of science... Yet they're not
people,
looking
people
for
the
truth.
Street. People on the street.
People say I'm a person of science, and I say, "Oh yeah, do you care about the truth, yo?" And they're like, and then they say, "No, I care about being right and having my world structured
but
around.
Do you care about the truth?
World structured around a way that I understand. That's
so,
what
so
I
Dan,
care about. Like
so
that's
Dan.
Not the fucking truth,
so
man.
Dan, so,
it's not reality."
So Dan, what started off as a mild apology. For perhaps getting something incorrect just turned into some sort of self-aggrandizing moment, associating yourself with just the philosophy of science.
Yeah, well.
Okay, welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Welcome.
We already talked about Thank what we're you. Talking about. We're
welcome.
Talking about Star Trek Discovery. You know that already because it's in the title on the podcast.
It's the titular player. Show.
It's the yes. No, it's not the titular show.
It's the titular show no. of Star Trek.
No, it's not. There's a lot of different Star
Trek. This is, but the one, it's the titular show of our episode of Star Trek.
He just wants to say titular.
There was that Kids in the Hall sketch where that guy kept saying titular, wasn't it? He was like, I was a titular.
There was that Dan Aykroyd sketch where he kept saying Titian instead of Titian when he was talking about, there's that old Saturday Night Live sketch where he's talking about art, talking about this. He's like, check out this art. Because it was some because Titian drew, painted a number of nude women.
I don't remember that one.
Look it up. Go to YouTube, type in Dan Aykroyd Titian. Sounds like Titian.
Do you remember when that, when that Belushi character,
rather base humor,
when that Belushi character
Berlushi
said something weird. He said it weird by accident. Oh, it's a real life version of the internet.
Yes.
That Berlushi guy, when he had that sword and was like,
yes, that was the samurai.
He was
the samurai sketch.
Yeah. Like a, did he have a deli or something?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really get that sketch. Really,
he was always
some kind of baby boomer humor.
He was a proprietor. Or he baby boomer. Anyway, it was Star Trek.
I'll look up the Discovery. Dan Aykroyd sketch though.
Yeah, look up Dan Aykroyd.
We'll do a podcast on it.
T-I-T-I-A-N.
Titian.
Titian. The joke is anyway. All right, Star Trek Discovery, another great episode. Let's get you again. This is the second week in a row I've been thrown off. I've been thrown off the standard list of podcasting maneuvers. So
manoeuvres. Is that how it's pronounced? Manoeuvres.
Okay. All right. I'll start. And I will make a comment, and then we'll go round robin, and we'll each make comments.
It'll be like the McLaughlin group.
All right. Okay, podcasting. Guys, we've been doing this a real fucking long time. I think we've...
This is the 117th.
This is the 117th.
The 117th.
We're beyond the 117th birthday.
The comment I'll make is that, unlike last week's episode...
The comment?
He said that funny.
The comment I shall make.
Oh, I thought you were like the commandale. I was like, that's a fancy-ass word, man.
I apologize.
It sounded like he was speaking a different language.
I do apologize.
It sounded really fancy.
Two witnesses here. I don't think we need to replay the tapes. Two witnesses here are attesting to
two
the fact
witnesses.
That I perhaps spoke too quickly. I jumbled my words a little bit.
Play back the film.
What I'm saying is my comment on this episode is that whereas last week I found a fairly predictable plot line, this week I found less predictable. I know that's not much of a comment. It took a while to get there.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
But that's in my notes as a comment to make. And so I'm putting it on the line out there. Now, round robin.
You mean
because they were going to the unknown, so you didn't really know what was going to happen.
Yeah, were you talking about which plot were you talking about? Just in general, both plots?
This whole episode. I enjoyed it in part because, while of course you know the broad strokes. Probably they get through the galactic barrier. Probably
and we do know.
Like, okay,
we do know the generals of Tarka's backstory that he's sort of said stuff along the way, but this kind of fills it out.
That too. I mean,
we still kind of know. We didn't really learn much. We just kind of got some...
Him and Oros got pretty close,
stuff,
huh?
Yeah.
They got pretty close.
I don't know. Did they?
Looked like they got pretty close.
They were certainly very friendly.
They were doing equations all snuggled up together.
Snuggly equations.
I read that as romantic.
I read that as romantic
because
as
it
well.
Seemed like a romantic and adorable
I mean, why
thing
not?
To do.
Why not?
Make some hollow equations
do you think
together.
Is Tarka an alien or is he a
He's Ryzen. A Ryzen.
Does that count as human?
It's a
No, they're rising.
We're all
they got
we're
a tattoo
all,
on their forehead.
We're all humans.
Do you think
they're humanoid?
What species is or
which is a prejudiced term?
It is.
If you ask me.
Well, we're all humans.
Humanoid.
What is that guy? Orzo? Oros?
Orzo.
That's it. Rice shaped pasta.
Yeah. Oros.
Oros. We don't know what we don't know. That's no type of established species that we know of, right? Oros.
You know, I don't believe so.
So, looking at a Klingon's forehead, you can tell that that's some pretty hard bone. Like, it probably, if they headbutted you, you'd be fucked up, probably.
Oh, yeah, they got ridges.
I bet that's a protective shell on their head. They could probably take a good shot to the head and be okay. Now, I'm bringing this up because I was thinking about Oros's head. He had some weird, like, ridges, hanging down ridges.
Yeah.
That you could, like, pick them up by if you wanted to. You could, like, grab it and peel a skull off.
Hang him on the wall.
Top of his
Jesus
scalp.
Fucking
and that's how you open it up and, like, you get out like a shrimp fork and you start eating away.
You're a fucked up person.
It
seems perfect to me.
Horrifying, but it's horrifying because it's accurate.
Yeah, it's funny because it's true.
Exactly. That's why
that's
it's getting to me.
That's a delicacy.
Yeah,
they call that a delicacy.
Maybe it's Gillish. Maybe he's Gillish.
Gilish, that's the name of his species?
No. Maybe he has
I'm
a Gilish.
He's got gills.
Hello.
Speak with a British accent.
So he tastes like fish.
Yeah, I couldn't tell if he was a fish guy or a what thing. But do you think those
what thing?
But yeah, it's a perfect peeling scalp.
He's got a perfect peeling scalp.
Yeah, but do you think those hangy ridges? Do you think those are hard like a Klingon's forehead, or do you think they're kind of cartilagey like ears?
Looked cartilage,
kind of like ears. Yeah,
I think so.
It would make more sense because it seemed like it'd be really fragile.
Could be a little wiggly.
Because Klingons are, even though they're ridges, you know those fuckers are. Although if you got your head caught in some shit while you're falling down as a Klingon, that'd fuck you up. But
I think Klingons do damage to shit that they hit.
That's how they get by, is they just do damage to it.
Yeah. And weirdly, Klingons were name checked again in this episode.
Oh, I missed that.
It was early
the
on.
The translators. It was a Kovich moment.
Yeah, so we get to see
Get
to see some cool Kovich stuff here.
What was the deal with that Dr. Harai? We never saw him again. Are we to assume he's going to come into play in a later episode?
He must, because they introduced him. The actor who plays him is probably a familiar face because he played roles on X-Files, on that on the Battlestar Galactica sequel Caprica. I think he was on an episode of Sliders. He was on the 4400. Sliders. He was on Millennium.
He played roles.
He was in the Highlander show.
He played roles on those.
He's been on every like science fiction TV show.
I thought he played Biscuits on certain things.
Oh my God.
Biscuits. What does that even mean?
It's fucked up, and I laughed at that.
You're so mad.
You
know, roles?
In the genre biscuits, area.
Biscuit roles?
Because he's talking about playing roles.
In the Canadian film genre, sci-fi arena, this gentleman, his name is Hiro Kanagawa. He's all over the place. He's a great actor. So, okay, they hired a great actor. Presumably, he's going to be sticking around. They also gave him a charming entrance, sort of acting a little bit unusual compared to what we might be used to in the context of Starfleet. Right?
That motherfucker was talking down to Kovich. Who has the balls to do that, man?
And they gave him this quirk where every time you see him in the episode, he's eating. He's snacking the entire time. He's snacking in the first scene, and there's a couple other times you see him in the background, and he's just like got a handful of like nuts or whatever, and he's just nibbling on them.
Yeah, that's funny. It's funny because I didn't even notice him until after that first scene. He was hanging around.
He's on the ship.
So there's a couple other times you see him, and
he's going to first contact.
And he's nibbling on shit the whole time. So like they've given him a quirky.
He's like the Brad Pitt.
Yes, like Brad Pitt, exactly.
Ocean's 12 or whatever.
Yeah, where he's always eating, and they've applied a quirky characteristic to him, a quirky character trait,
quirky character quality.
Yes, trait. I'll go.
The quintessential
with.
Quirky quality is. Running through rabid,
I don't know
round
if I'd call it quintessential. Rummage. It might not be quintessential. I'm sure there's others that are even better. But this,
my mistake.
But he'll be around. We didn't see much of him in this episode. I guess they just needed to let us know here's this new character, and he's on the ship with them.
How many more episodes are there?
I think three.
Three.
I think they have 13 episodes this season. 13. There's a bit of a controversy about this.
Oh, no. Again, another controversy?
Well, some people say there's 12 episodes. Other people say there's 13 episodes.
Is it a two-parter?
And the problem is that the people saying these different numbers, in my book, have somewhat equal authority. Mm. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, you were saying.
I was saying that...
I was
going to say something, and what I was going to say,
say it, sir.
Is as follows. Now I've totally psyched myself. It had to do with,
Star Trek.
We're talking about Star Trek. We're talking about how we saw shots of him wandering around the ship and stuff like that. It reminded me, for whatever reason, that engineering is, I've noticed, looks a little sparse in terms of people. There's Stamets, maybe one or two people in the background.
Sometimes Reno's there, sometimes
not. Like, yeah, right.
Sometimes Adira.
I don't know if they have to. I know because of COVID. So I guess at this point, it's like, what do you attribute to COVID and what's not a COVID? Because if you look at TNG.
They never really had much on Discovery. Like, you had Tilly.
Yeah. In TNG, in engineering, like, whether or not you saw a lot of people, it always had this feeling like it was bustling about.
Yeah, like, it was something that existed.
Yeah.
You could talk about it, like, down in engineering. You didn't even have to see it.
Because back in the 80s, you could pay extras with cocaine. It was legal. And
wait a minute.
It was a lot easier. They had a special dispensation in California.
Oh, wow, that's
why they're so bustling. That's why people are bustling back and forth.
They were getting it done.
The more you bustle, the more cocaine you get.
It's like, I'll wear a skirt.
Yeah.
Yeah. The what was it? A squirt? A squirt?
A squirt? No, it wasn't a squirt. A squirt?
Squirtle?
No.
Squirtle.
A man pants?
A squirt? It was what?
Scant.
Scant.
A scant.
It was a scant.
A scant.
It was a scant.
Because they say that in Lower Decks.
Skirts and pants. Scant. All right. So this whole episode thing.
So anyway, so there was, I'm sorry. So it was weird. I don't know if that's because of COVID or what, but the engineering seemed a little bit sparse. Maybe it's also because it's so dimly lit. It's how everything's kind of bathed in blue or something.
There's not a lot of.
Is that blue? Is that what color I'm seeing?
The focus.
Yes. That's not a particularly controversial thing.
Are those the tones I'm picking up?
Is on Stamets. And Stamets is basically all that's going on in engineering. And sometimes Reno's there to like come up with some crazy stuff, but like
maybe in the future you can control
because of the mycelial network. It's pretty much all Stamets. That's
true.
I mean, you would think, of course, that there would be more people on staff, but they're just the focus.
In the future,
is,
maybe you don't need as much.
But you don't need, of course, you don't.
All,
need
they
it.
Got robots. They got all them dots and shit. They got the Zora taking care
you
of stuff.
You have Zora. Like, come on,
Captain Kirk in the 23rd
what
century.
What more do you need?
He stole an entire starship with just a few other folks.
So.
He was a rascal.
Maybe because remember when Smart Barkley was all bitching about how the interface was too slow?
Do you mean in Star Trek TNG's The Nth Degree?
Yeah, that one, Patrick.
Smart Barkley.
Smart Barkley. But so he was all bitching about, like, complaining and moaning and stuff about, you know, how the interface is too slow. This interface is too slow. I don't like it.
Sounds just like Barkley.
Yep. And so in the future, you notice that they have like future. First of all everything's programmable. Even the fucking matter.
Even the antimatter is programmable.
Antimatter. Sounds like a bad idea, but maybe it's a good idea. I don't know.
Well,
but
it stands to reason.
Stands to reason for sure. It stamets to reason. But so maybe their interface, because it's all holographic and digital, and if you can see my hands, you could tell I'm in VR right now.
Yeah, man.
Maybe that's what Barkley was talking about. Although this is like, you have to use your hands, so it is like a baby's toy. Unlike.
You mean Back to the Future 2 style?
Yeah, with Elijah Wood.
Yes.
And Lone Gunman.
Oh, that was Elijah.
But, yeah, and so...
Your references are out of this world.
You're all over the place, Globus.
We're gonna start figuring... We're getting there. I don't want to impede your creative process, but... I'm getting a little confused.
So Barkley...
You keep waving your hands about it, talking about Barkley.
I'm saying why they don't need as many people in engineering in the future.
Because they improve their interface.
They improve the interface. Now, it's not as good as Smart Barkley's interface, because Smart Barkley's interface was...
It was Elon Musk style, straight to the brain.
I'm just saying, they've never needed that Elon many Musk people style. On Discovery in engineering.
Yeah, why? Because of the future
drive.
Because of the interface.
Yeah.
Because the interface is all holographic. Or do you think before they went to the future?
Oh, even back in the 23rd century. 23rd? Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, 23rd
what are you saying,
century.
Does Elon Musk have a brain interface?
He's working on it.
Oh, of course he is.
Says he's working on it.
Just like Zuckerberg's working on
it. Says a lot
on
of stuff.
A spaceverse or something.
Zuckerberg.
Hey, at least Elon Musk has rockets that work. Unlike those other people.
Yeah.
Anyway, fucked up billionaires. Story concluded. Back to Star Trek.
Back to Star Trek. It's time to be cool.
Discovery.
Saru is naughty in this episode. Saru is naughty. He liked naughty things. He liked naughty sex.
Wait,
and he liked naughty. What? He liked naughty galactic barriers.
But he still had time to like sound like he was lecturing everybody else.
he was.
He always sounds like he's lecturing.
Yeah, easy for him to say Kaminar is all good. There's no threat to Kaminar. He doesn't give a shit.
He a little bit had that. I know it wasn't intentional, but there was a little bit of the attitude. It was like, I'm so sorry to hear about that.
Yeah.
But,
right.
There's only so much I can care.
Kelpians are still doing all right.
So, yeah. But the brilliant Doug Jones has a number of great lines in this episode, but I want to know if you both and if the audience shares my opinion, subjective as though it may be, of what the best Saru line this episode was. Because there are a few candidates.
Okay, so The most memorable one that I wouldn't necessarily argue is the best one was in like the Beavis and Butthead in space scene where Lieutenant Christopher was all like, what did he say?
Like he says it's cool or something. And he's like, yes, things are cool. No, that's when he sounds like he's giving a lecture to somebody.
He says frontiers are always cool, Mr. Reese.
Yeah, he's like.
Yeah, so.
That I like. That's the one I think is the best line.
Right, so. Yeah. So that's what it was. Christopher says, so that's the edge of the galaxy. And then Reese is like, is it wrong that I think that's pretty damn cool? This was like, to me, that was like a Beavis and Butthead in space kind of scene.
Yeah.
For better or for worse. And then, Saru going, frontiers are always cool, Mr. Reese, sounding like really square and like out of touch. Like,
he was holding his livery. He was like holding so good.
He was like holding his livery. He had his hand on his liver.
He needs to get kicked in the chitin, I think. I'm going to kick that guy in the
chitin. What the fuck? That's pretty violent, Jesse. What do you think?
Jesus Christ.
Pretty violent on this episode, aren't we? He was grabbing at what would be where the human liver would be. I wonder on a Kelpian where their version of a liver, if they were to have one, would be.
Who gives a shit?
God damn, man. Jesse's really bitter about Saru this episode.
I've noticed that Jesse has been displaying somewhat of an anti-Kelpian bias over the last
You know what? I think you're right.
Weeks.
No.
Didn't you say, because I think last week or the week before, Dan had asked what would happen if Kaminar was destroyed and Jesse. No one would give a shit.
I think I remember that.
Yeah, I think I did too. That's not cool, man.
But anyway, there's
something about Saru. He's just kind of off-putting.
I like Saru. He's
no,
a little
I like him. I like him, but there's like he has some quirks. You know, he's a quirky guy.
He grows a lot of plants and stuff.
He's
and
always grateful someone shared. He did it again. Remember he went, Owosakun who was talking about how she's like, I'm sorry, I disobeyed orders or whatever. I wanted to help. It's reminded me back home of all this shit that's going on. And meanwhile, the ship's all falling apart around him. He's like, thanks for sharing. You know, that's why I thought I took it. But maybe he actually meant it. Because in this one, when Culber, by the way, Culber is like, keeps fit, man.
Yes.
That dude keeps fit.
Yes.
So,
yes.
But,
he's like 50 or something.
And he's
good
very
for him.
Fit.
Good for him.
Take him as inspiration and we could work out.
Work out.
We could work out.
But,
work.
Together,
podcast.
But Culber was all, trying to put Saru at ease about like his relationship troubles and things like that. And then Saru ended the conversation again with, I'm grateful you shared. And, it would make sense. Like he would actually. It's like where with Wosakun, it seemed like he was like kind of like saying thanks for sharing.
No, I disagreed with you at the time.
Yeah, you did. But now there's more evidence against my case now because when he thanked Culber for his time, that was legitimate. So I was like, that's just how he talks to people, you know.
It was cute to see Saru.
He didn't want to be made to feel foolish. I love that when people are like, I was made to feel foolish. Yeah. They go, no.
I think that's another great line of his.
Yeah.
It's honestly. Like, what, just once?
And again, owing to particularly to the delivery by Doug Jones. But yeah, just his whole interaction with Tarina, the almost middle school-esque style of being forced into revealing his feelings in a situation where this is really a 14-year-old boy sort of thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where you have a situation where maybe you're moving or something, and so you tell the person that you love. There's nothing to lose now, so you can tell them.
Yeah, right.
But you also are moving, so you don't really have to deal with any repercussions. But then the gag being that, it turns out your dad got a new job at the factory, so you're not moving no more. Yep. And now you have to continue going to school with this person that you professed your love to. That was a really sweet scenario. I'm not 100% sure whether it kind of... I mean, I guess it works with Saru. It's a little weird because they're making him seem somewhat immature.
It's a teenage situation.
It is. I'm fine with it. It just seems a little bit...
How long... Did Kelpians live before they were able to get past? So
that's good, what I'm not clear about. Yeah.
What excellent point.
Exactly.
They didn't. They
How
didn't
old is
live
Saru?
That long. I think there is an in context justification for this behavior.
Because
it's not like out of the blue.
And it's like Kelpians don't have much precedent for how to deal with feelings at that age, you know? So it's like hard to even, you're going to, for even knowing everything you need to know, people still will feel.
Kelpians do, but Saru doesn't because he's an old style Kelpian.
He's an old style Kelpian. Yes. So
good point.
So
another good point. We're fucking collecting good points left and right here.
That's why I'm here.
You are illuminating my mind, and I'm making adjustments as new evidence has arrived into my algorithms.
I'm the light in the darkness.
So, in a situation like that,
Dan is science, and you are a light.
I am the light.
Jesse is the light in the darkness.
The light.
All right, Dan. Sorry.
I was just saying.
Yes.
Yes, you were saying.
That in a situation like that he's in, a situation
Saru.
where he, as he put it, he says, "Oh, I cannot envision any situation more awkward than this." It was kind of sounded like a sad, pathetic phlox or something, but no, it was charming. But even in his situation, even if you know all the precedent, you know all the rules, you know what's normal, not normal, people are still gonna, it's still gonna be an awkward situation because of your emotions. So he has that plus his collective cultural history doesn't have a lot on that subject to begin with, so it's really hard for him to like figure out where his North Star is.
Okay, so
his North Star.
He is fully justified in this behavior.
Fully justified.
The weirdness I feel in it is somewhat reduced, and I'll try to incorporate this into my algorithms.
But
as
it
we
is
move along.
No, but I do agree with you though, because it does seem out of character and a little bit strange, which I guess is part of the point. But.
It does bring up something else.
How does it compare to like when Picard would be made to look foolish by women or children? You know,
I mean, mostly children. I don't know what
it's
you're
like
talking
every
about
other with, every other episode.
Like whenever he has a crush on a woman, which is
okay, all right. Please list out all the times that Picard had a crush on a woman.
There was that
was made, only, made to
there was
foolish.
That one who had his horgon. And then there was the one who he went to go.
You mean Vash?
And the one he went to go Indiana Jones with out and get some secret crystals.
Well, that was Vash. They were both Vash.
Okay, so it was Vash.
There was that other lady that was the
the
astronomer.
And the astrometrics person.
Loxana makes him feel foolish. It's just the situation of this dignified captain. And it's, he's like,
well,
but
yeah,
he doesn't know, he doesn't understand the how to navigate
that,
the minefield of love.
The captain.
But
and
that's
funny to see that.
That's
a gag, as you would say.
Yes, but I would characterize it differently. I wouldn't characterize Picard's failure to handle Loxana Troi as being
immature.
I would have it, it's more associated with he doesn't know how to square his cultural values around politeness and not causing any ruckus, right? He doesn't know how to square that with dealing with this wonderfully brilliant, vibrant woman that is Loxana Troi.
She's like the keeper of the rings or something.
Yeah, the ancient chalice of Reeks.
Yeah.
That
sounds like some serious business.
I believe it is. And I think presumably she passed on and Deanna.
Oh, she inherited that, Jax. Yeah.
Okay.
So
what I was saying I think it's a slightly different thing. I get what you're saying.
We're talking about Saru acting out of character, basically.
I'm agreeing that Saru is justified in this behavior. There's in-universe contextual or contextual, however you like to pronounce it.
What was that?
Justification? Contextual or contextual?
Okay.
All right. Okay. All
sounded
right.
Like you said something else.
I didn't, man.
Like when you got a gun and you're going hunting, hunt. That's what we, or maybe punt. When you like got a football and you punt, it's punt.
Oh, I thought you meant like punting on the Thames, where you got the stick and you stick it down at the bottom of the.
He plays
football.
The bally wadget.
That's not a thing, Dan.
Put a Tim's in the bally wadget.
Just making up stuff.
You're making up like a fanciful Britain.
Offending our UK. We have a fairly large audience in the UK.
That's a fanciful
you're
Britain.
Offending them. One more thing. Saru, immature, that's fine. It makes sense. But I do want to know, and we'll take a break. I'll ask the question, then we'll take a break and come back and discuss it. I want to know what you think Tarina thinks of this behavior. Legitimately, what does she think? All right. You think on that. We'll be right back in a moment. Okay, we're back. What do you think Tarina thinks of Saru's behavior? Do you think she's kind of like, this is cute? Or is she like, I like this guy, but he's getting a little creepy and weird.
I took a nice long walk around the block. So I've thought about it a lot because we were supposed to think about this for a while.
All right.
Sorry, I'm feeling cheeky or something. It must be this peachy keen monster drink.
That'll make it cheeky.
Monster.
So, right. It is an awkward situation, but at that point, as Saru, you just got to own it, because if you act all weird about it, the other person's going to think you're sort of like emotionally, you know.
Well, and you're giving advice, and I think it's good advice. But I don't know. I'm not sure exactly how we're supposed to interpret Tarina's reaction. Clearly, she's into Saru. I think we're supposed to understand that she finds him like really sweet and wonderful. And I would too. I find him sweet and wonderful.
Do you think it's going to end with her just being like, we should keep it up, keep it friends?
Vulcans are already kind of peculiar anyway, compared to what we would think of, you know, human style relationships.
So you're just, your question is basically, what did her reaction, regardless of
how did you interpret her,
how did you interpret her, the performance she gave in the.
Yeah. I mean, because
I was wondering a little bit if she did seem a little like, but like
I wasn't sure what they were trying to tell us with that. Was she feeling awkward because at that exact moment it was when she's realizing that she's going to have to go
right,
through the
barrier.
Right,
so maybe she felt awkward too.
So she was a little distracted. Or
she's that. Like the more well-adjusted one, and then he's a little weird.
But jumping off your point, Jesse, we don't see a lot of Vulcan romance, especially cross-species Vulcan romance. We do see it in the history of Star Trek.
What about Trip Tucker the Third? You
know, Trip Tucker and T'Pol, and we see stuff with
Amanda, whatever.
Yeah,
Amanda hug and kiss.
Sarek's wife and when Spock goes to Vulcan for the whole Ponfar business, we're not devoid of examples, but we haven't seen a lot of over multiple episodes, the slow building and developing of a romantic relationship, a little bit with T'Pol.
It's not that slow of a build. I mean, this was introduced, what, like two episodes ago?
No, season. No, last season they were already, at the end of last season.
Wait, by last season, do you mean part one of this season?
No, I mean season three.
You're talking about Saru and...
Trina.
Right. This has been a slow build-up.
Yeah. Well, so it seemed like she was a little bit, like, off-put by how Saru was starting to give the signs of maybe early-stage clinginess or something, without him meaning to. It's just maybe those are, like, early signs because he's being... So he doesn't know how to deal.
Which I can't imagine was the intention. That's what I'm getting at.
Right. Well, what I was going to say is that it ended with her wanting to have food with him and telling him that he was comforting to her. So I think just from that alone, we can just assume
that
she's
going
to
eat
cool.
Breadsticks with a fork and knife.
Only if they're like those hard, you know, crispy breadsticks.
Super crispy.
So
yeah.
The thing is Star
the crispiest
Trek.
Crispiest you can replicate.
Star Trek often has had issues developing relationships. They've had some success here and there and less success in other times. I'm not Paris sure business. I'm really digging this budding relationship. I think it's appropriate and wonderful.
It's really sweet.
I think the actors are doing a great job with it, but I don't know if it's just because it's such a great pairing and the actors are so great, when I watch it a couple times in a row, I start thinking, it's like, I don't know, I'm not clear on what I was supposed to think at this moment.
Jesse, do you think it's like sweet, like as in sweet, or sweet as in like that's totally sweet?
I think it's the first one.
Okay. That kind of sweet. Like, oh, that's sweet. That's sweet. Oh, that's
the former.
All right. How about we move on to the Tarka business?
Tarka business. You're my hero. Gonna
Tarka
save
wasn't
the day.
Always such a jerk.
Well, he kind of was, though, because.
He still kind of was.
What
but he can be somebody's friend.
I didn't totally get this on the first watch through. On my second watch through, I'm guessing my understanding is that it turns out that Tarka was placed in there in that cell with Oros with the intention of rooting out what thing Oros was up to.
Yeah, I wasn't clear on like at what point that was.
It seems like from the beginning that's why Tarka was set in
there. And they pulled that fucked up thing. They said to Oros, "It's like here's a new partner because you lost your last one." It's like
it turns out that dude's head exploded.
Yeah,
and the way you word that. It might be subtle, but to basically put the responsibility on the other person with your words like that, to say you lost your roommate.
Mm-hmm.
I know they didn't mean anything.
You get all A's.
Hmm?
You get all A's. because your roommate died.
Oh yeah, like that Zach Morris movie.
Yeah.
Right. So I just struck to me. It's like you lost your roommate. I know they didn't mean anything by it, but it also kind of makes it feel like we didn't kill your we didn't explode his head. You lost him. So do you think they exploded his head because they wanted to take it a step further, because they wanted to put Tarka in there to root out his dodginess? I hadn't even considered
that, but why not?
Why not?
That's perfectly reasonable. We don't know any other reason. Okay, a couple of things. First of all, Tarka is telling us this tale. It's him telling us. I think we're meant to take it for face value, right? So even though he's an unreliable narrator.
Yeah, when he was saying over those, just past the tree line, part of me was like, is he lying?
But lying. we're seeing the video footage of what happened. So presumably this is basically what happened. We're getting the true story here.
Right.
What do you feel about this? Does this significantly change your feeling about Tarka and his motivations? If this is the whole story, we don't even know if this is the entire story. There could be another shoe to drop.
It's still,
I mean, there could be another shoe to drop, but I don't think he is lying at this point, because he said it from the very beginning. He said it was for this guy.
It doesn't seem like he's
lying. At this point, that story hasn't changed. He's still following the same story. He's done nothing to disprove it. Now, maybe they'll just do a totally fuck twist and like it'll mess with us.
But trademark.
There hasn't been any indication, you know, sort of some kind of M. Night Shyamalan twist.
Right.
I'm not exactly sure what to make of this again, because we're seeing what's happening. It's a very touching story. The actor who played Oros was, I don't have his name handy, wonderful job.
It's like Oser Chow?
Yes, I think that's it. The set direction was great. The transitioning between the current time and the flashback was really good.
Is it Oser Chow?
It looked cool. It sounded cool.
Wikipedia says that Oser Chow portrays Tarka's missing friend and partner, Oros.
And all of that, I liked it. But at the end of it, it doesn't seem to change. Am I supposed to think, oh, okay, now I get where he's coming from? Because I kind of don't. And I might be one of those, the good of the many outweighs the good of the one kind of people, or the good of the few.
And even like the whole thing about another dimension, like we know that there's like a mirror universe and that there's a possibility that there could be this other stuff. But this other guy is basing it all on some kind of mythology or something. How are we to believe?
Yeah. What's that?
You know, like,
and he said he has proof of it with his calculations.
I mean, this is like a Kayalise or whatever. Yeah. It's obviously
it's like the string theory where there's the math, but there's no way to prove it.
Yeah.
And that's right. No way can't prove that
it's a
shit.
Good analogy.
But the way it's presented, it's obviously some kind of like analogy for getting to Stovall core or some shit, right?
Stevacore.
Stuffy core.
Stevador.
It does sort of seem like an afterlife sort of situation. Okay. There's a lot to unpack here, because first of all, we take it all for face value. I still don't understand why can't he just say, you know what, I've been waiting a long time, I'll give it a month, let's sort out this DMA business first.
He's already been waiting years. I don't know why everything is. I guess he's just worried that he doesn't want anyone to get to like sneak up and be like, oh no, you didn't, and then take it from
I think
him.
Another confusing aspect is where there is a mild implication. It's not a strong implication. Mind you. It's not a strong implication. It's merely a mild implication.
But it's not an explication.
But there's a mild implication in this episode.
A mild implication.
That, because Tarka refers to escaping from the compound, hiding in the caves and bushes and stuff, and then there being a huge power overload at the compound, after which he saw a number of ships leave, and so when he went back, it was abandoned. So one interpretation, and possibly the interpretation Tarka has taken, is that Oros found a way to tap into all that power and activate his transporter device.
Mm-hmm. And it wrecked the colony.
In other words, Tarka is hoping that that is the case, because that's sort of the most direct way for him to be happy that his friend, very soon after he escaped, after Tarka escaped, his friend Oros was able to also escape through to another dimension. Now, if that is the case, there's a bit of a disconnect between that and Tarka saying he needs this otherworldly mega device in order to power his transporter to that dimension. Because it didn't seem like Oros needed it. He was able to get away with like a warp core.
Whatever they had at the ship.
And that compound, which was a rural planet compound.
They had just some whiny machinery.
Right? So that's a disconnect that jumped out at me. Now, you could easily explain it away as saying, well, Tarka is not as skilled as Oros, so his machine is not as efficient, and so it needs more energy. But they kind of haven't. It's just Tarka keeps saying, like, I need that energy.
Right.
What was he going to do if the DMA never appeared? We know he was already working for Starfleet on alternatives for a long time prior to the DMA existing. He got involved when the DMA came around because he concluded that it must be powered by some tremendous source of power. But that's a disconnect that I'm having a little bit of trouble reconciling.
So when they got caught, because again, and what was, speaking of implication, what was the implication as to why they got caught? Was it because there wasn't, they said there wasn't enough power, but was that actually the case, or did they just shut it, the guards shut it down?
That's unclear.
And so, right, and that's unclear. And so, yeah, where did he get the power from, I guess, if he did eventually zip away like you think he did? So, I don't know.
And Back to the Future too, you can't use hoverboards over water unless you've got power.
You got to have power.
You have to have power.
It's like that extra hoverboard you like plug into. What a great movie.
Speaking of Tarka's motivations, what you're saying about you're not sure what his motivation is, unless there's something that drastically changes in the past couple episodes, like we just kind of discussed, I don't want to call it a problem, but the issue I guess I might have is that if everything Tarka is saying is true, then we pretty much know his motivation from the start, and there's no sense of like gaining sympathy for this guy. Yeah. It's pretty much much sympathy as we were going to get from when he first told Book his mission. Like, that sympathy could have only gotten worse, like gotten less. We could only become less sympathetic if he became more of an asshole. But as it was, if he was totally honest with Book, which it seems like he has been thus far, there's no sympathy to be gained. It's not like, because we already knew. It's like, good, you weren't lying. That doesn't make
this sort of, it gives us the details. It maybe seems like this is only like him. He's like explaining himself to Book. So maybe this is going to...
It's made more personal because we're witnessing
it. It's going to... Yeah.
But there's a few layers here. First layer is this pretty much the truth of the matter? And I buy into that. I believe it. 100%. Sure. I believe it. Second layer is, does that in any way justify his actions? No. It doesn't seem to be, right? Because he just wants to get to this magical land he heard about. And then the third layer is... What the fuck is up with this magical land?
Yeah.
And as we've discussed, is it a metaphor for the afterlife? Is it some sort of actual afterlife? Is the way that it turns out the way Oros got to what was it called, Dan? The name of the place?
Kyalise.
Does Oros just shoot himself in the head or something, and that's how he gets there? Because the afterlife. Right. It turns out I was like, you don't need a transporter. Right. You just fucking blow your brains out, and that's how you get there.
That whole weird idea with they did this.
I live, I die, I live again.
They did this whole shtick with the movie Event Horizon.
Yeah,
this idea.
I love that movie.
It is a fun movie. I remember
weird fucked up movie.
I was watching it like late at night about like 7 years.
A lot of Latin in that movie.
7 years ago, Latin. And I was surprised. I hadn't seen it in decades. I was like kind
of
creeped out.
Oh, that movie is one of the few movies that has successfully creeped me out.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm a big tough guy. I do get creeped out by Jason Isaacs scooping his eyeballs out and talking in Latin.
Yeah, that's not cool.
A bunch of other horror. And Sam Neill. I'll watch.
Oh, is Jason Isaacs in that movie?
He is in that movie. Wow. I will watch any
not Oscar
movie
Isaac
with
no Jason
with Sam Neill in it. I will watch most movies.
Merlin,
with Jason Isaac,
Sam Neill.
So cool. Wait, the point I was basically saying though was this idea that, you know, there is a heaven and hell exist, and there is such a thing. It's
or
just
at least heaven. Maybe hell is the contemporaneous world.
Right, but maybe heaven is
maybe some, it's just hell.
Maybe heaven is a place we go where we die.
Maybe heaven is a place on earth.
Maybe I know it's a song, but like this whole idea,
pretty decent.
Too. People always talk about like, you know, the afterlife. You die, you go to this secret place where everything's wonderful, and then someone comes along and posits like, well, what if that secret place is just in a different dimension? You know, and that whole thing, which is fine. Sure, why not?
Mount Olympus.
And here again, I can appreciate the strength of the motivation, the how much pull believing in a dimension of pure peace and happiness. And
boring.
The idea that exists.
Come on.
The idea that let's grant for the purpose of discussion and argument. Let's grant that such a dimension does indeed exist, that Oros is entirely correct. And let's grant further that there are no monkey paws gimmicks related to the dimension.
Wish I had a monkey's paw.
Where it's like you go there and everything's really peaceful, but there's some like weird twist that makes your life miserable.
Everybody has like an upside down face.
The rain that turns you inside out.
Oh, God. Yeah, right. That's right. Oh, no, that's horrible.
Let's posit that all that is indeed the case.
I understand
someone's motivation for wanting to get there, and I understand how that motivation could be compounded if they believe and hope that a loved one of theirs is also there. I understand all of this. It is sympathetic in the humanistic context that we can all sort of understand that pull. In the Star Trek context, it's confusing because it's not. I'm like, am I supposed to be sympathetic to this guy? Because what he's doing is fucked up.
Yeah.
He's risking billions of lives potentially.
Oh man,
fucking around, trying to get to heaven.
But
if that's what he's trying to do, that's fucked up.
But he's still
selfish.
But he's still telling Book that they're doing that he's in it to save lives. But he has already established his motivation. So why is he?
What he's established is that he's perfectly fine if a side effect of what he's doing saves lives. His first attempt didn't work. He has not been sufficiently chagrined, which blunts how much sympathy you can have for him. And as sympathetic as I am for his situation and how impressed I was with the characterization of Oros and the telling of the tale in as rapid a fashion as they are forced to do, since it's squeezed into this one episode as a B plot or A plot, whichever plot you want to say it is, impressed with all of that. I still don't feel that bad for the guy.
It was good TV, but you know.
He's still kind of obnoxious, which is just part of his charm, I guess. That is true. Like, I don't feel bad for him at all. I guess, he's like, I can understand.
Maybe we're just terrible people.
Yeah, I mean, I guess,
I do feel bad for him, but I can
understand that he feels these strong emotions, but it's like, and so he seems relatable in that sense, but he's taking it like beyond a reasonable amount.
We're
of
on the side
effort.
Of Starfleet and shit and the Federation. He's gone rogue.
Yeah, so. but
Book is right there with him.
Book's gone rogue.
But not totally rogue in the sense that he does have something relatable.
Oh yeah,
about him.
Right. No, there's still.
But
are,
it doesn't mean
are rifts
and
between
so,
Tarka and
so he can seem relatable, but not sympathetic at all, really. And I don't know if that's. But I don't know if that's what they were going for.
Or sympathetic and not relatable.
Meh.
Yeah, do you think they were going for either of those?
It's a gray.
Well, it seems like they would. Who knows what they were going for?
As we've discussed earlier this season, as we've discussed in previous seasons of Discovery, for all the strengths you get from the serialized storytelling and the season-long arcs, there's a lot of great stuff that comes out of that. One of the things that can be problematic is when they set their stories up with these little mystery structures where we learn information over time. We don't know until the absolute and final episode of the season how it necessarily all either fits together or how the writers have intended for it to sit together. So I don't know. It's difficult to comment on all this stuff because we don't know 100% where they're planning on going.
It's a weird thing with like mystery stories because do you want to be able to figure it out? Should you be able to figure it out? Is that the sign of a good mystery story? Is that you're able
ideally,
to
that in you're retrospect, able to, you're able you're to, like, oh shit, I should have known that.
Yeah, but like
I like 10 little Indians. That's a good one.
But that's not that's not the original name of that book.
Oh no, that's right. That's right. That's exactly right.
And
then there were none.
But
is that not the original either?
Don't worry about it.
That's a different story.
I have enjoyed this season, and it's not that I haven't enjoyed it, but looking at it, it's really just this season has just been a string of failures, basically, right? Like they keep trying to do something.
They're having a hard time.
It gets fucked up. Yeah. They keep trying to, they chase them into this place, and they get fucked up, and they jump
away.
The DMA
is a big
challenge. And they try to stop the DMA, and they fuck them up. They keep like trying to make things happen, and things just kind of fuck up. So, like, Is anyone learning anything along the way, or is this just kind of like a fun ride to get on? Or
we have a bit of an analogy,
because what is being gained throughout each episode on its own. You know,
we have an analogy within the Star Trek corpus, as it happens.
Corpus,
because season 3 of Enterprise was essentially set up as a season long arc. Now they had more episodes,
more episodes,
more filler episodes. And each episode, despite being part of a season-long arc, was somewhat more independent of the other episodes. However, basically, season-long arc about stopping a threat to Earth. So not too much different than what we're dealing with the DMA. However, in that case, there were a number of, as you say, Dan, there were some successes and some failures along the way throughout the season until the conclusion of the season, and some twists and turns and things like that. There is a little less of that here, whether that's just a choice because they wanted to tell the story differently, or because they have fewer episodes, so there's not as much room to dilly-dally. I don't know. But it is a different vibe.
It made me think, to bring up Nth Degree again, because we just happened to watch it recently, the similarity that these
Star Trek TNG's The Nth Degree.
And this season of Discovery, I don't know, because it's not all out yet, but what it seems to be headed is like this idea at the end of the episode, there's like this spoiler alert for Nth Degree. See, I said it before I gave it. That's what you got to do. Some people say spoiler after. That's not good.
That's not good.
Time doesn't work that way.
It's almost mocking.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how I do it.
That's more like a timescape situation or cause and effect.
So at the end of the episode, there's this like alien species, right? And some kind of crazy powerful creatures that are just fucking with your shit, right?
The 10C.
And then at the end,
he's talking about the Nth Degree.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And
the big heads.
Yeah, the big head people.
Yeah, what were the Nth?
The Latvian Orthodox.
Were they Scytherian or something like that?
Yeah, Scytherians. Scytherians. Anyways.
A thing or two about this Star Trek.
So both of
are. Up in my noodle.
Both are.
Keep all that Star Trek knowledge up in my noodle.
Are this
you got that shit?
Both of are this
long dangly noodle. Sorry, I knew that was the fucked up one. That last one was the fucked up one. I apologize. Dan.
You just read my face.
A noodle too far.
So both of the stories are sort of propelled along by this idea that there's some kind of powerful shit fucking doing something weird, and we don't know what that is yet. Now, in the terms of the Nth Degree, the Scytherian seemed more like. Like a plot device, right? Mm-hmm. Like it was a nuisance to the story that the story needed. The story needed a question of why is this happening? And it's like, well, we got to think of something. Let's just throw these Scytherians in there. That's one interpretation you could take by watching that episode. I just happen to also think it's neat the idea that it's like they're going to the center of the universe. It's absurd. These aliens live in there and they're bringing you in. It was
and the clouds were milky white.
Yeah, milky white.
Milky white. And it was stellar
that's
clouds.
How you got the Milky Way.
And so it was so ridiculous, but I really dug it. There was something like far out about it. But then that's also a reason you could say, well, maybe it was just kind of a weird thing they threw in to make the shit going on. But in the meantime, it was a means to tell this story about Barkley, right? This is a story about Barkley, and it was about
Smart Barkley.
And it was Smart Barkley. Smart Barkley. Smart Barkley.
Everybody had matching towels.
So it was really just, we're just talking about, you know, what would happen to this character, Barkley, and let's explore that for a while. Whereas this, I'm not sure what the focus is. Is the focus the journey or the destination? You know, I don't know.
Is it character-based? Is it plot-based?
Yeah, you could say you probably would assume it's a journey kind of situation because, you know, it's all based around what the fuck is this thing, you know?
They are
revealing a little bit more about him.
In a serialized format, we're always in the middle of the story until it has concluded.
That's true.
That's when we can get a better idea of what's going on. I would argue you can do it in different ways, and even in the same show, there can be certain threads that are a little more coherent and others where it's a little, maybe I'm not exactly 100% sure what I'm supposed to be thinking about this. All the DMA stuff, all the first contact stuff, that seems totally sensible to me. I don't have any problems with that plot line. That's very traditional Star Trek style. Here's a problem. Here's how we're going to try to solve it. That didn't work, so we're going to try a different way. Okay, we're going to. It's all about figuring out communication. We're going to make a few points that about confirmation bias that one would hope that 32nd century Starfleet officers would not have to have explained to them
because it's
sort of a basic context, basic concept in terms of critical thinking. I guess for the audience, I understand why they did that.
And I guess you're right. It wasn't just a string of failures because, for example, this episode you could say was sort of half a success, you know.
They got through the Great Barrier.
But the one where they chased Book and Tarka, the ones where they're chasing Book and Tarka seem like they were just failing every time.
The previous episode was kind of a bunch
It was good, but it was again very predictable. This episode it was unpredictable beyond they're going to get through the galactic barrier.
This is the most serialized the Discovery has been. It's every episode is, you know, just continuing the story leading to
it feels that conclusion. Way at times. Yeah, because it really does.
Because there's been even in the previous season they were sort of more episodic moments.
So was the A and B plot gonna? They must join up. I mean, they're already intertwined, but I mean,
I do like.
But is Oros going to be directly involved in this A plot somehow?
Okay, how about this? Well, let's take a quick break.
Oh no! Did I do that?
We're going to take a quick break.
You made us take a break.
And when we get back for the last segment in the show, we will cover who is out there beyond the galaxy in the big old bubble land? Who is that? Well, who are our guesses?
Who's out in and the big old bubble?
We'll discuss. Hey, they didn't mention espers or people with ESP and getting super brains. But they did mention getting your frontal lobe fried. And we know that Book's got some ESP power. So we're going to talk about that.
They did not mention it.
They did not mention it. So we'll see about that. Okay.
So we'll see about that.
We
huh?
will. Be right back. Okay, we're back. We've calmed down a little bit.
Hey!
In the intervening time.
We had to take several minutes.
Things were getting a little...
out of control.
We're getting a little agitated.
You were talking about... I don't know if you want to talk about this now or later, but there was... you were talking about online...
Now and laters, I prefer Starburst.
First time I heard now and later, I thought the kid said narrow-later.
Mambas are good.
He said that last week.
Narrow-later. Did I say on the podcast, though?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, shit.
That's been a previous discussion.
Well, okay. A few podcasts. You were talking something about on the internet, people found something humorous.
Okay, yeah. Well, let's mention that in the audience.
I bet they
odds
did.
And ends. Remember, I have a note about that, too. Mm. So we'll get to odds and ends in a second. But before we get to the odds and ends, I wanted to discuss a couple things. First, in Where No Man Has Gone Before, which we discussed in episode numero uno of this particular podcast. Where No Man Has Gone Before, Gary Mitchell and Elizabeth Daner, by the way, Sally Kellerman just passed away, sadly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like today or yesterday.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah, it was sad. But both of those...
Ivan Reitman died.
Yes, he also died recently.
Oh, man.
So did Bob Saget.
Well, that was...
Louis Anderson.
Yeah.
He also died recently. A number of people. Regardless of
someday it's going to be you.
That Bob Saget shit actually kind of bummed me out.
It was sad.
Yeah, that's weird.
Gary Mitchell and Elizabeth Daner, they obtain sort of godlike powers when they encountered the galactic barrier, right? In that episode, we were led to believe they were talking about people who had high levels of ESP.
Oh, or right. ESP. I remember that now.
That was some 60s there was shit.
Like, it was in their file.
It was like when they thought ESP was still a science.
Yeah, it was in their Starfleet file.
The CIA was like, we'll use this against the Russians.
Yeah.
They got a high ESP rating.
Do you ever see that movie, The Men Who Stare at Goats? That's fucking, that's bizarre. That's a weird movie.
But so in No Man Has Gone Before, that was one of the criteria was that if you had more ESP potential, you were more likely to get the god powers.
It's
right?
like that having midichlorians, basically.
Sort of, except it made more sense somehow.
It still seems scientific.
But we don't hear any real mention of that, but Tarka does make a reference to frying your frontal lobe.
Yes, he does.
I think I'm.
I thought he was talking about going through the antimatter at the galactic barrier.
Well, there's the negative matter. There's antimatter, and then there's the negative energy.
Negative energy,
which they mentioned this episode, and was also mentioned in Where No Man.
So the thing that fucks up your frontal lobe has nothing to do with the galactic barrier. It has to do with the DMA people somehow.
It has to do with the galactic barrier in Where No Man Has Gone Before.
Right.
The DMA people are outside of the galactic barrier, so you have to pass through it now. They have set up this story such that Book and Tarka are behind the Discovery. They have not yet crossed over. Discovery
gotten them bubbly bits.
They gotten the cool bubbly bits, which was a fun action set piece.
It was
all
awesome.
It was pretty rad.
That's pretty cool.
Get yourself some snake leaf. Get yourself some snake heroin, snake cocaine.
Snake heroin.
I expect nothing less from Discovery.
Whatever floats your boat, get some snake wine and
snake wine.
and watch those snakes.
Oh,
those are
snake
great.
Juice.
Those are snake juice. But Book and Tarka haven't yet crossed. I'm wondering if one of the reasons is because they're going to play around with this idea of this godlike powers thing. I don't know if they're going to reference it in a tangential way. I hope they reference it somehow.
Because we don't know if they got that programmable antimatter.
They mentioned, they got the, well, they did get,
they actually
they got
get
it. They found it.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I would like to see some fucking weird, far out. Weird.
I want Book to have magic powers.
Yeah, exactly. I want to see something that's fucking weird, man. That's like, I mean, after all, why not? Just why not just go for it and be
they
fucking
owe
weird?
Us. They
yeah,
owe us big.
Well, we did get to see
they
it.
Owe us
we,
big
we,
time.
We got to see it. They might not want to repeat it since Commander Ransom went through basically the same thing on Lower Decks in season 2, which was a great scene. But it was, it was a whole episode focused on that. I'm not saying they got to do it. But I would like them to mention it in some way or have something happen. I don't know.
I don't even have.
Even know. I'm just tossing it out there as like a maybe thing.
Just like a maybe. Know, just toss it out. Just like a maybe. So noncommittal.
I don't know if you all have any thoughts about that, because otherwise there was the other thing I wanted to talk about was the DMA people, because you're kind of each episode we get closer and closer to them, and so it's worth discussing who we think it might be.
You think it might be somebody?
Well, the producers, if you could believe the producers, and I in this case I opt to believe the producers. They mentioned
you would think.
They mentioned something about like, oh, it's not going to be anybody who you think it is, right? They're like, it's not going to be like Secret Vulcans or something like that.
Secret Vulcans. It's the Klingons. No, it's not the Klingons.
I don't think it's going to be the Klingons. I don't think it's going to be the Borg. I don't think it's going to be species 8675309.
It's the Jem'Hadar. 8675309.
Right. What were they called?
Yeah, that's exactly.
Same, whatever.
8675309. That's speaking on Voyager. They're the ones who. Seems we could fight the Borg and stuff.
fight the Borg.
I buy into that, but there are theories floating around on the internet.
Maybe the galactic barrier is made up of the founders.
Well, see, probably not, because they said it's not going to be somebody we already know.
But it's supposed to be someone we know, but not already know.
I think the So I'm talking about reading articles third hand and Reddit posts and all this other stuff.
Third-hand.
My understanding from the producers is it's not an.
You read a headline.
It's an alien race. It's not some alien race that we've seen before. That doesn't mean it's not people from the future, humans from the future, humans from the past.
Human all over your ass.
One person on Reddit suggested that it could be that's where Oros is living, that instead of a new dimension, he just created some little dimensional fold. I don't know what I think about that. I kind of doubt that. And I mainly doubt it because it seems like it would be a stupid
I mean,
story, too similar to last season, quite honestly.
So basically, what the idea is that the DMA is just Oros making the DMA.
The theory states that Oros is living in the, what do they call it? The gravimetric zoom bubble.
I didn't hear that one.
That's
ridiculous.
The DMA is being said. I don't buy that.
Hypersphere.
I think it's made by people. Or some intelligence. They've already introduced the idea that maybe they don't
hyperfield.
They don't speak verbally, right? That was the whole thing that Dr. Harai was on about, is that we shouldn't assume that our translators will work, because we shouldn't assume that these whoever we encounter is going to communicate verbally or even in any way that's remotely similar to
why
us.
Why would he live in one of those bubbles? Those bubbles aren't permanent anyways.
It's not those bubbles. You're conflating two things. The bubbles are in the galactic barrier. They live in that giant separate thing that's kind of like outside, a Dyson sphere.
Yeah. Oh, that outside. Thing. Oh, yeah, yeah, right. So
that's and, where that's right, where the
and,
aliens live.
And so how did he get there?
Or whoever is there.
So I thought you were talking about the bubbles and the...
How did I get here?
And the galactic barrier. I was like, I never heard that. That is fucking ridiculous. But no, if he lived in the Dyson sphere, how did he get there? Is that like, how did he power himself to get there?
Because maybe it turned... I think the
how they do
the
that?
Theory implies, and I'm not... I don't buy into this theory, but the theory is suggesting, or the implication of the theory is that his idea of going to a different dimension may in fact not be that his it's actually creating like some dimensional bubble or something. Oh. And he lives in that, and then it's not quite what he thought it was. That part I can buy the idea that wherever Oros wanted to go or wherever he ended up may not turn out to be exactly what he thought it would be. Not necessarily that it's bad, so, but maybe it's not.
But does that mean
the mythological
that, but
version.
Does that mean Oros is a DMA person and he's the reason for the DMA?
That's one theory.
And
I
so,
hope it's not
and
the
so,
case.
Okay, and so that is actually kind of on the similar level of what I'd heard from somewhere on Reddit, yeah. Some person saying something.
Somewhere
maybe, on the world, someone said something.
Maybe you and I read the same post.
We
it's
might.
Kinda like, it's kind of like when people look out the window and they know they're looking at the same moon.
One of the issues with that, though, would be like, what is there something like a cat chasing its tail or something? I guess because...
Begging the question?
It's like Oros is out there because the reason that Tarka found this power source is to go to Oros. But Oros created that
it's
power...
It's not begging the question in this case because... Because
but
Oros
created...
left beforehand.
Oros created the power source, and so it's just like the plot created itself in this weird way where...
Ouroboros.
It's not like... It's
it,
not,
actually, it actually makes sense well, from a logical sense.
I mean, it does, but it's
it
kind does, of...
It's not a time loop.
No, no, but it's not like...
Because it all would have happened after they had been separated.
So the... What it seems like so far is that the DMA power source is a different thing entirely than to what Oros did. And if they're suddenly the same thing, it's like Oros created the power source that allowed Tarka to go look for him. I don't know. It just seems a little too...
I know
it's got a nice bow on it or something.
Yeah, but it is not a paradox. It's
I didn't
not
say
like,
it was a paradox.
I'm not suggesting that you did.
Well, then
I'm
why did you bring that up?
I'm just making it clear.
I didn't say time had anything to do with it. I'm just saying it kind of wrapped itself up and packaged its own little same you know.
Now,
live out on a
here are some other theories that are out there. Some theories are thing. That maybe this is related to the whole Calypso short trek, which I know not everybody has seen. I think not everybody on this podcast has seen the Calypso short trek.
Calypso.
But there is some
I
stuff.
I think that I've seen it.
There's some time business and other
have
business
you seen
that
it?
Goes along with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, everybody has seen it.
There is, could it be related to Discovery's time travel into the future?
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe. Is it some sort of computer AI people? Is it some totally new species of people that we didn't know before? I don't know. It could be a number of different things. I'm no closer to any sort of guess or conclusion than anybody else out there. Some people feel strongly one way or the other. I do not.
There are only more questions.
Yo, when you were talking about scooping eyes out, that reminded me of when they were scooping his
oh yeah, that was gross.
His what is it called? It's a thing.
I don't know.
Some kind of sensor bit.
You know,
it was harder for Tarka to get it out than it was for the other guy to get it out. Did you notice that he didn't groan as much?
Oh yeah, Tarka had this big gooey black
hole.
He was all like,
"What are you doing?" And then like he did it to the other guy, and the other guy was just like, "Ugh."
Well, he did just get beat up pretty good.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah. All right. Any other major points about this episode? Otherwise, we can delve straight into any dangly bits.
I have a few dangly
which bits. We call odds and ends around these parts.
Do we want to talk about the scene where they were going through the galactic barrier and they were doing their galactic barrier?
The bubbly bits.
It was
the
cool. I mean, I don't know if you have any particular comments. To me, there wasn't much to talk about other than I thought the special effects were cool.
Yeah.
It was tense and exciting. And
it was just like sort of bridge action.
Like they played it up. Even Detmer even said something.
Detmer action.
She said something to the effect of it's like a traffic jam, you know, basically. It's like how traffic
works. Like a log jam.
And so
Detmer's always using anachronisms. Yeah. Like last week she was talking about
needle
in a haystack.
As like my grandmother used to say.
Yeah.
So I thought
her grandmother's like younger than us.
I'm kind of isn't that wild?
Not even born yet.
Not even born yet. I thought, and I'm kind of glad they didn't go this route, because it would have been a little cheesy maybe and tonally strange. When they did the part where they were sitting, for some reason they threw in that part where they were sitting in that space cell, right? And they're like, we're in a traffic jam, it's gonna take forever. And then Stamets was like, ooh, maybe if we get in that lane over there, we'll zoom ahead. I thought they were gonna do a whole gag where it's like they go to the new lane and then the other one starts going fast, like in real traffic. I'm kind of glad they didn't, but it's like
the way you describe it makes me think of applying Benny Hill music.
Yeah. Yakety Sax.
Yeah. So I thought the scene was visually really cool, yeah, and stuff. There wasn't really much in the way of tension.
Now, I thought there was tension, but never tension as in like, oh, something terrible is gonna happen. But it was visually intense. It was like a little roller coaster.
Like, yeah, I'm not sure why they threw in the part where they switched lanes. I thought they were gonna take that further somehow, but it's fine. It didn't matter. It was fun.
Adding a little flavor to the whole business.
And when they saw the edge of the galaxy along the lines of like these coolest things to look at, where the edge of the galaxy looked pretty cool.
It did.
And they're basically when Reese was just like talking about how it was pretty damn cool, and Saru was like, frontiers are always cool. And it's just like, I felt part of that felt like the showrunners were complimenting the abilities of their special effects artists. Yeah. That's kind of like what it felt like. It's like, yeah.
It's like those guys are always doing a good job.
They are doing a good job. I'm not saying they aren't, but it's just funny when you point out how awesome something on your show looked.
It was cool. But was somewhat funny. Undercut by the fact that I can't imagine that the Edge of the Galaxy looks anything like that.
Yeah, I don't.
Not that I don't normally care about that in Star Trek.
Not even through like a color corrected super camera, like
with big bubbly things, and the things have different colors depending on like their prismatic potential or whatever.
They're Reese and Christopher, like I said, they seem like Beavis and Butthead in space in that moment, but everywhere else they just seem like normal
competent Starfleet
officers. Yeah, but that moment. They just were like, whoa, you know?
All of them, all of them so had their weird little moment, because Detmer and Nilsson's hair is always a little bit unkempt on the bridge.
Oh, yeah.
It keeps getting blonder.
Every time there's like a tense moment.
Is it my imagination?
Like little
keep getting blonder.
She's got her hair tied back, but then little plops,
spoofy.
What's the term? Spindles?
Fumble flops? Is it crimped or is it
I'm
like
pulling mine out of here because I
got long hair. Teased? So another part I thought of the Nth Degree again was when they were in...
This guy likes the Nth Degree.
I did too.
Star Trek: The Next Generation is the Nth Degree.
It's fun.
Season 5. What was that? Episode 19 or something?
Some shit.
Feels like episode 19.
Sure.
I want to say season 5.
So when there was the chromatic aberration or whatever going on?
The remember? Quantum dilation.
Yeah, it reminded me of Data with like the audio dilation. Quantum dilation.
Wait, was that it? It was, no, it was
some
a,
kind of audio oscillation or...
It was quantum oscillation.
Quantum oscillation. That was causing the a beep to happen every 12.3 seconds or something, or delay. Ah, it was a delay.
I see you have a machine that goes bing.
Yes, yeah, right. That's right. That's what Doctor. That's what McCoy has in his shit.
Yeah,
that big red fucking button. But so that was kind of silly when Data said it, and it was like kind of felt a little silly when there was a chromatic aberration on Discovery. But part of me was like, well, you know what? I don't know. I've never looked into that before. So sure, why not? It somehow sounded more believable.
It's simultaneously cool and silly. It's cool because it looks cool, and it's silly because.
But it somehow seemed more believable.
Oh, and it might be totally real.
Yeah.
Who knows?
It seemed, yeah, and it seemed more so. The thing with Data and Nth Degree, it seemed more just kind of like they just threw
Bobby.
So, anyway.
All right. Well, move along to odds and ends.
Move along home. Move along home.
I enjoyed the Carbon Creek reference. Did you catch the subtle Carbon Creek reference?
No.
Star Trek Enterprise, Carbon Creek, which we discussed in this podcast, I don't know, in the 90s, episode 90, something. I don't know, somewhere back there. Kovich says at one point, when he's trying to make a point, he comments about how the Vulcans observed humans for almost a century, prior to first contact. And that was Carbon Creek. Those Vulcans were, they had already been monitoring Earth, and they went there to
just
check
them
out.
For some
reason,
I was
just thinking about first contact.
I was thinking that they had some ship just floating outside of the planet for 100 years, and that doesn't make sense.
They were just waiting on the outskirts.
They had both, because even in Carbon Creek, they had actually, the reason they were, part of the reason they were there was because they were already getting interested in these goofy human people. These tricky humans with their baseball and all that.
Reminds me of what I wanted to bring up about how Kovich said something about how there was something else he had to do that was important. And then somebody was like, how is that more important? It's like, well, it's my job to like tell you that, make sure that you don't even care about that.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Whatever he said.
It's like they better follow up on that.
He's cooking something up.
They better follow up on that. Well, I was wondering.
It's like, I'm going to keep it that way.
And David Cronenberg is excelling in these scenes in particular. The more sinister, sort of, like, not sinister, but.
No, he's just so deadpan.
Yeah, I was brilliant.
I was wondering if when we see this plan coming out, if Bryce is going to be involved, because it was strange that
I believe he would be.
Yeah, because it was strange that they showed him leaving the ship like that if he wasn't having something bigger in the
works.
There's
a meta wheat reason for that.
Okay.
The meta reason is that Ronnie Rowe Jr., who plays him, he's got a big role coming up on a show called The Porter, which is going to take him away. I think they needed to set up a reason for him to be away from this guy. just that time of night.
Good for you. Good for you.
Yeah, but they're just, I think they need to, create a scenario where Bryce is not going to be 100% of the time on the Discovery anymore. So that's sort of the meta reason for that. But it also introduces this idea that Kovich is up to something cool and interesting. I'm really excited to see where it goes. Is it going to lead into a Starfleet Academy show? Is it going to lead into the Star Trek Section 31 show?
Is Tilly involved?
Is it going to be purely about this season and he does some clever business? I don't know. But with David Cronenberg, with that plot line, I'm consistently intrigued, and I don't feel like I'm having, like, you know, the rug pulled out from under me in some cheaty kind of way. Well, we'll see. We'll see. You never know. It could end up being something totally stupid. But so far, I'm really engaged in that storyline.
We got a Let's Fly in this episode.
It was a happier Let's Fly.
It was happier.
And there was one, I think, in the previous episode.
That was a sad Let's Fly.
Yeah.
All right. Now, Dan, getting back to your earlier point about the 3-hour tour.
Oh, that was the line that people thought. Okay.
That was the line. It was so when I'm watching
it threw me off because I remember in the one where they went to Haz Mazzaro's party barge or whatever.
Haz Mazzaro's karma barge.
Karma barge. They did the whole reference to the.
He's nice. He's fun until he's not.
Until he's not, which we have yet to see.
We don't know.
But,
you're getting there.
What do they have calamari on Hosmer's?
I don't know. What? Oh no, I don't know. I don't know.
They calamari escargot. Dan is suffering frontal lobe problems.
Yeah,
he's rubbing his frontal lobes.
I didn't bring my null space bubble to the galactic barrier or whatever. When they did the Emperor's New Clothing reference.
Yes.
And so that it kind of jumped out at me. I was like, oh, they did that thing again? Or it was like...
But Kovich's mystique, part of it is, this guy wears glasses. Why is he wearing glasses? Why is he wearing glasses in the 32nd century? People don't even wear glasses in the 23rd century. Why is this guy wearing glasses?
In the future, they don't care if you're bald.
Yes, in the future, they don't care if you're bald, but they can also like zap your eyes with LASIK. Future LASIK, little robots crawl around, little mites around in your eyes and constantly carve out your, just while you're sleeping, little mites, robot mites, nanites, crawl across your eyes and just constantly carve your eyeball, your cornea to refocus your lens so you always have excellent vision.
And you feed them like some kind of weird fish gel and they poop extra eye on your eye in case they need to replace some of the
extra
eye. Poop out eye juice.
Yeah.
So he's already... a fascinating character. He's fascinating because it's fucking David Cronenberg for some reason, which is hilarious. Mm-hmm. He's wearing glasses. He wears suits that are futuristic, but a little less so than everyone else. He's got the Starfleet badge on. We have never heard what his actual position is. Is he in Starfleet? Is he in the Federation?
Right.
Who does he have jurisdiction over? Who does he report to, if anybody? Is he Section 31? Who knows? Is he from the 21st century? Is he from the temporal wars? Is he what's his fucking deal?
From the mirror universe.
He gets along with the holograms. Is he a hologram or not? Probably not. Who knows?
He's the whole package.
We don't know the deal, and all that mystique is.
What are you worried about?
It's fascinating about it, but Okay, so he makes this comment about, you know, going on a 3-hour tour,
right,
which then results in a very Data or Spock-like comment from Saru saying, right, it's going to take more than 3 hours.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a figure of speech. All right, so for the uninitiated in our audience, a 3-hour tour has caused all this ruckus, which I took as just a cute little joke, but when I went to the internet after watching
people got all worked up.
Not in a bad way. Most people liked the joke. It was funny because you all of a sudden start seeing post after post after post on Instagram, Reddit, Twitter. People talking about 3-hour tour.
It went viral.
People say, that was the funniest shit I've ever seen.
Come on.
It was not. It was great. It's good writing. It was well acted. It was not the funniest shit you've ever seen.
No.
Other people posting things. I just wanted to say about that 3-hour tour line. If you're a millennial, did you get it?
Come on.
That was multiple posts asked some questions similar to that.
Don't even bring it
some
up.
Some people were like, I didn't get the 3-hour tour. Like, I don't get what that line was. And then other people not refusing to give them the example, saying like, haha, well, if you don't get it, you just don't get it.
Google's your friend. Google's
your friend. All sorts of discussion about that, which to me was just both awesome because I love when people get to discuss Star Trek.
That's
awesome. It's also hilarious because you can't predict what's going to cause the most discussion in an episode.
You can't, because when you brought that up to me about, like, if I could guess what part of it was sticking out, I thought it was going to be like the galactic barrier is pretty damn cool or something.
I asked you that partly as a test to be like, does it jump out at you? Yeah, is it something that jumps out at you? For some reason, the internet's gone crazy with the 3-hour tour.
I would have had to spend a good long time thinking about it because that didn't occur to me up until you just mentioned it, in which case Gilligan's it didn't occur Island. To me. You told me.
There was one whole post that was saying, like, all right, let's now assign Gilligan's Island characters to the crew of the Discovery.
Oh, man, this is too far.
It's like, who's the skipper? And then somebody was like, is Saru Gilligan?
Oh, man.
I think probably, yeah. Probably, yeah.
Too far, man.
What about Stamets?
Stamets is the professor.
I like how Adira was sass and Stamets.
Yeah, they were
funny. They were going like cutting it a little close.
The relationship between them is great, and between Adira and Stamets. So I'm glad Adira's back. So we'll see how that progresses.
Yeah,
it's been an interesting episode because people have been leaving and coming back, and Tilly's still gone, and then Bryce is leaving, and so curious to see where all this goes. There was some consternation about the Admiral's line about leaving the galaxy. We've never done that before. Whereas Kirk crossed the galactic barrier a couple times, I think, and Picard and crew and the Enterprise D, the Traveler, sent them spinning out of the galaxy to some other galaxy. So technically they as in Starfleet have been out of the galaxy before, but also not within living memory of the time period in which Discovery takes place in. So you decide the degree to which you want to be upset about that statement.
It's kind of funny to think about the idea of a sort of a toll booth collector at the edge of the galaxy, or like a troll that guards the bridge or something. So that, but it's not created by anything. It's more of just a side effect of all the shit around it creates this sort of system that requires this kind of like queuing back and forth system. I mean, I'm assuming it's total bullshit, but like, it's kind of fun. It's a fun idea. Why not? You know, it's like, I love alleyways are cool because alleyways, you don't make an alleyway. Alleyways are made as a side effect of two buildings put together.
It's the in-between bit.
This whole queuing system got made as a side effect of all this star shit.
A shadow is like the only two-dimensional
thing.
A shadow is a two-dimensional object.
It only
exists from the absence.
Yeah.
The absence of light.
Right. That is the only two-dimensional object.
Right. Last thing I wanted to mention was...
Don't do it. I told you not to fucking do it.
I wanted to know who the vice president is.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be funny if the vice president was like a Klingon? Because we haven't seen any Klingons. It's like the only people we haven't seen is a Klingon. And if they follow...
They just casually pop in the scene.
Maybe it's somebody who's...
Like Worf in... what was the Worf in Insurrection? Didn't he just kind of pop into that movie?
Pretty much. He was like... that was the movie where they were like, Worf, what are you doing here? And then you don't... He's like, well, actually... And then you don't hear his response. we don't know who the vice president is, but
maybe it's Vice President Skrillex to President Rillick.
the EDM person, the EDM group that produces the that off-kilter music that some of the children listen to.
I don't even know. Is Skrillex EDM? I don't even know fucking.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, American DJ.
It's whatchamacallit. It's that particular brand.
Yeah, I guess DJ would be that kind of stuff. I didn't even really fucking know what Skrillex was about. I just knew that Skrillex did some shit.
Any other odds and ends, or shall we close things down, so shut things down,
so Stamets,
tie them up in a bag, throw them in the river?
That's fucked up. So Stamets, he didn't do it like Scotty. As Scotty, as we know from the episode with Scotty and Jordy.
Scotty would have lied.
Scotty said you're supposed to underpromise, or yeah. I guess lie, which is sort of entailed with that underpromising. It's like, in order for this to work, I have to make up a line. So Scotty, Stamets, Scotty underpromises. Jordy's whole deal is he just promises. And Stamets seems to overpromise because he said, oh, we'll get there four light years out. And it was totally, they were like twice as the distance from the place. How did he get that so wrong? If it was,
owe me 5 light years.
Yeah, that was a good line.
I did like that.
Yeah, but he goes, it's not an exact science. It's like, yeah, it's not an exact science. So why don't you be a little bit more conservative next time if you don't fucking know? You know, why are you getting everyone's hopes up and shit? You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying?
All right.
Oh, yeah, Tarka was only in prison, got out of prison 10 years prior. That's not that long ago.
Well, he's probably still pretty... Well, you know, it was hard to interpret that because he was there for about 10 years ago, but it was 2 years, but I wasn't sure if he meant 10 years when he got in.
He was like, I thought he was 4 or 5 years in solitary.
Well, that was before he even got to that place.
Yeah, and then
we can believe him.
And then he got there for 2 years, and then
he was telling that to the guy he was trying to trick.
And I think it would have been 10 years since he left. According to what he told Book.
Man, all this fucking math. Jesus, I just want to watch a television
Tarka
show.
Had twitchy eyes which was weird. You remember he had twitchy eyes? He had some kind of, he kept squinting his eyes.
Squeezing
his eyes when he was reading about the galactic.
Like the Duke of.
The multiverse variable
like
or whatever.
The Duke of Gluster. What happens to the Duke of Gluster in King Lear? And he gets his eye jelly stomped out by, I forget who.
Fixed spectrum emissions.
Reagan's husband. Or
Jesse, do you ever get any fixed spectrum emissions at night?
About once a month.
All right. Any more, Dan?
When he said, let's get this over with, it reminded me of the other night when it was really cold and I had to like go outside and shut all these windows. I really didn't want to do it. I was like, fuck that cold. It's like, normally I don't care, but that night I was like, I don't want to deal with this cold. So I was like, I have two choices. Either I can put it off and do it like an hour from now, or I can just do it fucking now.
I was like,
let's.
This is at your house?
Yes.
You had windows open in the daytime?
At night.
Windows open in the night, it became too cold.
Yeah, it became too cold.
The windows originally were open to allow some fresh air to come in.
Yeah, and they were in a porch style area that's not insulated. So it was fucking cold. And so I was just like.
Porch style, not a porch.
Not a porch,
style.
Porch style, but not quite a porch.
What do you do about allergies and stuff?
I don't do anything about allergies. If I get stuffed up, I get stuffed up, but I don't get stuffed up that much. I'm not bragging or anything, you ask.
Your nickname is going to be Hollywood. Mister doesn't get allergies in the middle of
Mister Hollywood.
Yeah, Jesse gave me a fuck you look.
It's because we live in a place where two allergy zones overlap. It's miserable.
Well, yeah, I don't advertise it, but if you're going to ask me, I'm going to tell you. Like, I'm not allergic to poison ivy either. You want to get on my case about that?
Disco Stew doesn't advertise.
This guy's just leaving his windows
but
open.
Don't you ever like?
I sleep with my windows.
Don't you ever fucking say like I really don't want to do this thing that's only going to take a couple minutes, but I so much don't want to fucking do it. Okay.
That's like what happens when I have to pee in the middle of the night. Yeah, I don't want to get out of the nice cozy blankets because cold outside the blankets because I leave my windows open so it's all cold. It's all warm under the blankets and all cozy outside, but I got to pee pee.
My pain is more important than your pain, Patrick.
Probably true.
Okay.
From an objective standpoint, quite probably true. Mm. I'm willing to accept that. On some scale, some measure, I'm willing to accept that.
Yeah.
Okay. Was there some point about your allergies and windows?
He was talking about, let's get this over with, how they're going to run in and do all the shit and get the antimatter. And it just reminded me of when I had to close the windows that one time. It was like when they had to sneak into the old Emerald Chain camp ships and things.
I enjoyed the anecdote. I learned a little bit more about your lifestyle. Not 100% sure how those two concepts connect, but I'm fine with that. Good color and flavor regardless.
When they shut down the camp, I guess they just kill everyone in the camp. That's why they had to leave?
I don't know. Who knows? Because you would take your useful prisoners. They were going to take Oros anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to say one last thing. So this discovery situation where It was one of those when they went in that goo blob, that goo blob that looked like it looked like at a, like a scene out of Fantastic Voyage or Inner Space for all it you did. Kids. All you kids out there, Inner Space, that you'll recognize that one. But it was like looked like that. But then it did that whole thing where it's so fucking big that it looks small again. You know how they do that thing where things get so big they look small? Like when you talk about two like universes like bumping against each other, like it just looked like a big membrane. It's just a cell, and then it's so big that it's actually small and it makes up another larger organism. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying.
Okay, that's all I had to say.
It was a good one. It was a good one, legitimately. All right, so that's it for the Galactic Barrier. The Galactic Barrier.
The season's about connection. Is that what everything's about now in fucking the world is about connection?
Last season was about that, too. The next week, we have a quandary. We'll figure it out between now and God. Then. Because next week is episode 11 of Discovery, and then episode 1 of season 2 of Picard. So we're going to figure this out for you in some sensible way. We'll provide you information on both of those television shows because they're both important.
Maybe we'll just do two podcasts.
We might just do two podcasts. Quite probably we'll end up doing two podcasts. But regardless, look forward to that next week. In the meantime, you can reach us at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. You can get us on social media at It's Got Star Trek, whether it's Twitter, Instagram, you got Facebook, you got YouTube. All that good stuff is out there. You can reach out and contact us, become a follower, tell all your friends, and all rate and review.
You can become a father. I think that's what you're going
to say. Follower. You can become a father, too. That's out of our hands. You can write us at feedback@discussstartrek.com if you want any advice. We can provide some advice, perhaps. Free advice.
I became
advice.
A father recently.
Jesse became a father recently, so he could give you some really good advice.
Patrick's been a father.
I've been a father for a while, so Jesse and I can give you bad advice.
I'm not a father, but I was a son, so that actually makes me more in touch than all of you.
Yeah.
Dan can give you some good advice.
You got us all.
Yeah, I've got you all.
Just write us feedback@discussstartrek.com. Otherwise, we'll see you. No, we won't see you. You will hear from us next week in some form or fashion. We talk way too much Star Trek next week. So,
oh my God, so much Star Trek.
Probably a bunch of other shit, too.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
It's nice that they are all so eager for a three-hour tour outside the galaxy.
It will take longer than 3 hours.
Figure of speech.